1968. Stories which plunge vividly into other worlds, other dimensions, other times. SF-68.
The voice in the earphone. I've got a story to tell you. A story that really happened, although you may not believe that it happened, because the chances of it ever happening again are one in a number that has as many noughts as you can think of lined up after it like a lot of little oval eggs. And yet, the fact remains that it happened. To appreciate what really happened that July afternoon, you have to know something about Shorty. His real name wasn't Cruz, of course. It was Habibel something or other, one of those Asia Minor names that aren't translatable, at least not into anything that resembles English. They began to call him Cruz in the years when he was a fruit peddler in a little town near Kansas City. He used to drive his donkey cart through the streets, jingling his bell and singing his wares in a high voice that penetrated every kitchen in the town.
In a new watermelon, fresh food. Watermelon, got all the fresh food. Fresh food.
Yes, that was Shorty. You understand now why they called him Food. The Shorty part was immediately understandable, you see, because Shorty was very short.
Fresh food, watermelon, fresh food.
Even when Shorty learned to say fruit instead of fruze, and he did learn, the name stuck. They still called him Fruze. Shorty Fruze. Now, the most important thing about Shorty was his son, Bill. Not many people guessed in later years that Bill James was the son of the little fruit merchant. Bill dropped his last name when he went to the University of Kansas, you see. Bill James was as different from his father as a boy could possibly be. He was big and handsome.
Great athlete.
And
popular, too. And inevitably, Shorty's boy grew away from nervous little Shorty Fruit. Whenever Bill played ball, I would see Shorty there with a happy smile in his eyes, but always in some inconspicuous corner, and I could never find him again when the game was over.
And then Bill became a pilot. He learned to fly an aeroplane better than anyone else. He was a natural flyer, and immediately one big area of Bill's world was closed to little Shorty.
My Bill, he has done the solo, and him only 17.
What a million, Facebook.
Hey, Shorty! Shorty Fruz! Shorty Fruz! Hey, Fruz!
Folks said Bill could fly a barn door if anyone put an electric fan on it. And after Kansas, he went to the airlines. And then the shooting started in Europe.
Wanted to join the RAF, but Shorty said no.
No, 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 and no! You are not even 21 this year yet. Bill! Bill! Come back here, Bob!
Bill James was very bitter. And just a week later, it happened. The accident with Shorty watching. Shorty grieved unnaturally over Bill's death. He would blame himself. He tortured himself. Because the last time they had ever talked together, there had been hard words. From then on, though, Shorty Foos was always at the airport.
Again, look.
Who?
The little fruit man.
Oh, he's always here.
Always.
You know he's Bill James' father?
Him?
Yes, Bill James' father. You know the one who was...
Bill James? Well, I never did.
Bill James' father. He's always here, though.
Every day.
Becoming a nuisance.
I know. They're going to ask him to stay away.
Because on account of him being a nuisance. Yes. Well, I mean, what else?
Whenever Shorty had a few spare dollars, though, he didn't just watch the aeroplane. No, he took a trip in one. He arrived hours before the flight time, and people laughed at him, because he was always first in line. But if they had known that July day, what was going to happen, they wouldn't have laughed at all. Shorty was always first in line when he wanted to go on an aeroplane, for one good reason. He wanted a front seat. From the front, Shorty was able to see as nearly as possible what Bill must have seen from the pilot's cockpit. You see, Shorty, although perhaps he didn't really know it, was trying so hard to get close to Bill. Closer, in fact, in death, than he had been in life. And that was how Shorty happened to be on the front seat of an airliner bound from Denver to Kansas City on the July day when it happened.
Oh, it's he wasn't there. Oh.
That's all she said, that stewardess woman, before collapsing right across Shorty.
Madame! Oh, madame!
Shorty himself doesn't quite know why he did, what he did do in the next few minutes. No one else seemed to be aware of what had happened. The seats were those high-backed ones, you see. One can't really see what's happening up at the front of the craft, and then I suppose most of the passengers were dozing. But anyway, instead of giving the poor fainted woman first aid, Shorty took the stewardess's keys and went into the pilot's cabin. Shorty locked the door behind him. Why he did this can only be explained in terms of some larger pattern of which the act was a part. But the fact remains, Shorty locked the door. At first, he comprehended only that there was something vaguely wrong with what he saw. And then it came to him that there was no pilot and no co-pilot, and no hand was on the controls, and no eye was watching where the ship flew.
This is what Bill saw. This is what Bill saw.
One pilot lay stretched out on the floor. The other was thumped behind his seat. The pilot and the stewardess were suffering from a violent attack of food poisoning from a lunch they'd eaten before the flight. But of course, Shorty didn't know that then. He just touched them, fearing they might be dead. And then he poured water from the vacuum bottle on their faces. But the pilots didn't move.
There is a pilot in there? With a passenger, yes? Or a doctor? But if I go to her, what? Panic? Yes, they will shout and cry and beat their breasts, the people out there. No, I will not go back. I will not kill them. I will sit where Bill sat.
And Shorty Foo sat down in the pilot's seat, trembling, but not with fright.
This is the stick. Bill talk of this stick to me many times. Two pebbles, like Chuch and Greg. There. Oh, but there are so many things. Needles and figures and other things doing things. Automatic pilot there. She is making the plane fly good. But for how long a time? What will happen when there is no more petrol to fly it? Radio. Radio. That's what you must do. Radio. Lucky Bill would have done. The microphone, yes. Lucky Bill, he told me. And the phones were to go over the ears. Put them on. Put them on. Hello. Hello. Kansas City. Hello, Kansas City. Oh. Hello, Kansas City. Are you there, Kansas? Hello. Hello. Oh, nothing is happening. Kansas City is gone. Kansas City. Oh, how much petrol to fly at the end of the airplane. Hello, Kansas City.
Hello, old fella. Been wondering where you were. Anything wrong?
Of course. There are no pilots for this airplane. They are fallen down there. You see, both not dead, but sick. Me, I'm no pilot. Me and airplanes, we've been together for a long time, but never have we been flying together with my hand flying. It says automatic pilot just now, but for how long? You tell me that. For how long, huh? Go and see what's in there. I come and look, and I see there is no pilot. This is so bad. My kid Bill ought to be here. He was a flyer.
Yes, I know.
Hello? Are you still there?
Well,
you're going to send a pilot up here or something. I mean, what do I do?
Well, if I were you, I'd fly her into Kansas City.
Fly her into... Oh, sure, that's a great idea, but one little thing. I don't know how.
I'll teach you.
You what?
Now, put your hands on the stick and your feet on the pedal. Don't be afraid. They won't bite.
Pedals. I see the pedals. See them. Yes, funny thing. I don't feel any frightened. Just foolish somehow. Like that old man on the quiz show on TV. What boy did he make a fool of himself? Where's the stick? Yeah, I got the stick.
Now, don't be scared of the instrument board either. You won't need most of the things on it. They're merely luxuries. Now, see if you can find a dial marked altimeter and tell me what it says.
Altimeter. Eight.
That means 8,000 feet. Now, look for a handle marked automatic pilot.
They got that one, yes?
Turn it to off.
Turn it to off. Off? You're kidding me. Turn the automatic pilot to off, you crazy man.
You're going to learn to fly this crate, aren't you? Keep the stick to center.
Hey, the range, it goes up again. How do you know?
Well, everybody does it the first time. Now, let's try a few things. Landing's easy, but you have to know how to bank. Let's try a left bank first. Put the stick a little left and a little forward. Push the left pedal a little, just a little.
Billy, he tell me things like these, about these things. He said once upon a time that the pedals were just about the opposite of a bobsled crossbar.
Level it off. Press the right pedal a little. Now stick back to center. Now pull it back a little to put the nose up. How was it?
A little jerky.
Yeah, you probably lost some altitude, too. That's because you didn't keep your nose on the horizon.
My nose?
The plane's nose. Now, let's try another bank. Another left bank. Better? You know, you might fool me and come in on the other side. Okay, our right bank. The right pedal and so on. Come on now. Let's do it.
That was pretty bad, yes? Yes. Bill, he said once to me, Bill was my boy, you know. Bill said to me, the right pedal somehow, it had at first, and the left one at first.
Now, look around and find the switch that lowers the wheels. You'll need that.
Shorty said he surrendered himself to the voice like a man floating down a river. What it told him to practice, he practiced. What it told him to push and pull and press, he did. Once it seemed, while Shorty was learning to fly 7,500 feet above America, someone was desirous of entering the cockpit because...
Hey, hey, you there, you there. Shall I open the door?
Yes. I wouldn't. Why take a chance? You can fly this job, Pappy. You don't need any help.
They told me I was too old to fly. They even go and kick me out of the Kansas City airport.
They won't today.
You know what I would like now. Can I tell you what I would like? I would like the big 50-cent cigar. I would like a big chair. I would like to put my thumbs into my vest. Hook them in, huh?
You just keep your hands where I told you to put them.
Hey, you there.
I'm here.
Them down there, them things, like wheel tracks. You see, what are they?
Oh, that's the old Santa Fe Trail. That's the road they took before there were railroads. And they went to the old Spanish cities in Mexico and brought wagon loads of goods home to sell. That's one of the most famous roads in America.
Why, that's what I do. That's how I do it. I get this stuff down south and bring it up here to sell. I used to sell it in wagons, too. Cantaloupes and watermelons and fruits.
Sure.
Shorty tried to imagine prairie schooners and caravans creeping along the ruts of the brown plain. And he fancied he could see another vehicle in the parade. It was pulled by a patient little donkey, and the driver jangled a bell and sang his wares in a loud, high voice. Impulsively now, for Shorty would have told the voice in the earphones anything at all, any secret thing, any long-hidden dream or remorse. Impulsively, Shorty told about his quarrel with Bill, his son. He told the voice how sorry he was that the last words had been spoken in anger.
I don't think Bill held any anger at you.
You say you knew Bill. How well did you know him, eh?
Pretty well. Well, how do you feel, old fella? Now, you're going to take her down now. You're going to make a good landing. Your kid Bill would be proud of you, real proud. You better start to lose altitude now. Now, take her down to 2,000. Slow. Plenty of time. Slow.
Shorty pushed the stick forward. Slow. 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 No. The smoke of Kansas City was on the sky, and the tallest buildings were beginning to separate from the horizon.
Slow. Slow. This I do for you, Bill, and for all the people in this big plain. Yes?
When Shorty first saw the field, he wondered how a plane could hit anything so small. He banked, feeling all the firmness and power of the ship as it turned into the wind.
A torch ship. That's what I got here. A torch ship. Bill, I feel so close now to you.
Staring into the little white strip of the runway, pulling back the stick little by little, as the voice in the earphones told him to, cutting the airspeed, trying to hold the wings level, the next 10 seconds would tell whether he was going to crash or not.
Why, no taxing in, huh? That kind of thing not done anymore?
There's going to be trouble, believe me. Oh, boy, oh, boy. There is going to be such trouble. Okay, you guys. Okay, let's have it. Okay.
Why, hey! Who's that?
At first, Shorty had felt like hiding. Then he remembered some things that had happened during that afternoon, and he sat up straight. The attendants and airport staff saw his civilian coat at the window and stopped growling. Shorty leaned out of the window and spoke to them in what he imagined to be an authoritative voice of an airline's captain.
We have badly sick men aboard. Take care of them before you touch all the other things on the aeroplane.
And that's all there really is of Shorty Fruz's story, except just one more thing. Rather important in a way. Come with me to the airport manager's office. They've snapped his picture for the papers and shaken his hand, all of them, until his right hand is very sore and he's thinking of using his left one, although that isn't really done. But then, Shorty's never been a celebrity before. He's just sold watermelons and all kinds of fresh fruit along the Santa Fe Trail, all down the diverse years of American history.
Mr. Manager, sir, I would like to do something.
Sure, Shorty. You name it. He can name it, Candy. Candy, name what he wants.
Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Yeah.
What I would like to do. This thing I want to do is to go to the tower and thank the person that helped me bring down the ship. Huh?
Mr. Fruz, I... I get it. What a sense of humor.
No, please, no.
Why, what?
No, please, I'm not humorous. Not a little bit. No. I wish to thank the man who teach me, little by little, how to fly and bring the big airplane down to rest safely. The man in my earphone.
Huh? Mr. Fruz, you know, don't you, that we've been trying to contact your plane all afternoon? Nobody in the tower has been talking to you.
Well, he couldn't have imagined it all, could he? On the other hand, it doesn't seem possible he could have remembered enough from Bill's old aviation chatter to bring in that plane without help. Shorty swears someone was talking to him, and he thinks he knows who it was. And after all, the important thing is what Shorty thinks, because he has stopped grieving over Bill now and walks with his head up and doesn't hide from people and looks up at the sky with the squint of a flyer.
SS-68,
stories which plunge vividly into other worlds, other dimensions, other times. SF-68.